Welcome to No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. We promise to inspire, challenge, and make you think beyond the ordinary, reaching for a life lived for love alone. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and tell your friends to join us every Saturday night at 5:30 and Sunday morning at 9:30 Central Standard Time. And now, here's my husband, Bishop Randy Dean.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to you all. I'm Bishop Randy Dean. I'm alive to love. I believe lesser values than love easily devolve into the rabbit hole, the dark cave of BS, which can be a lot of things to a lot of people, but for the purposes of what I'm here for, BS is bait and switch. We bait people in by pretending to be interested, and then we switch to our real agenda, which in some cases of people of faith is our agenda is just to get your butt in our pew or make you do what we want you to do, have a new volunteer. One of the things I used to hate hearing myself say was, oh, we have new people. We can sure use them. Caught myself on that one day, and I realized what an awful thing to say about people. We should simply say, let's love them. So, no more bait and switch for this boy. I'm inviting you to join me. No more bait and switch. No more BS. Let's be alive to love, shall we? Let's be people of the highest priority for the human race, and that is love. It's a long haul. It's a lot of heavy lifting. It will require a full attention to detail, and that's what we're going to talk to you about today. A lot of attention to detail. Speaking of details, so what we do here on Alive to Love is we start with the Love's Creed, a creed I wrote years ago as a New Year's resolution, but it became a creed in my life, and I'll share that with you momentarily. Shortly after Love's Creed, I wanted to invite you to say the Lord's Prayer, that which Jesus taught us to pray. And we'll get to that in a moment, all right? So here's Love's Creed. I'll read it to you in total. Then we'll go back through it, and I'll ask you to repeat after me. Yeah, I know, it'll make you feel like you're at a wedding altar, and that's a good thing, because wedding altar is where you make a lifetime commitment. And I want to invite you to that kind of lifetime commitment to love. All right, here's Love's Creed. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less than love. All right, there's the foundation for this broadcast. Now I'm going to ask you to repeat after me. I'll give it to you in short bursts, and you repeat after me. Here we go. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less than love. Can you imagine yourself living like that? Can you see yourself walking day by day through your ordinary routines with that echoing in your thoughts and your meditation, your mind, that you're alive to love? You're alive for love. You're not eating, breathing, and sleeping to regain energy to cause pain, but you're here to create the atmosphere of love. That's what I invite you to do with me day by day. And that's why I teach here on the principle and the sound practice of love. If you'd like a copy of Love's Creed, I'd be happy to send you a copy. You can email me at Randy Dean Ministries, that's all one word, lowercase, randydeanministries@gmail.com. It'd be my pleasure, my honor, to share with you Love's Creed, something you can put on your computer, your phone, your device, put on a 5x7 card, tape it to a bathroom mirror so when you're brushing your teeth, well, it'd be kind of hard to say Love's Creed, brushing your teeth. Brushing your hair, let's try that. You can see it and repeat it daily. It is, I believe, a stabilizing force. And on the topic of a stabilizing force, the Lord's Prayer. This is the most prayed prayer in all of human history. It has been prayed by tens of millions, maybe more, all through the last two millennia. Jesus taught this prayer, and this prayer, I believe, is offered as, first of all, communication with God. That's the primary. But in that communication with God, I think there is this stabilizing force. So that's why I offer it to you here, and I've started just recently having you pray the Lord's Prayer with me. So here we go. If you are so inclined, join me in praying with your eyes open. It's a unique exercise, something I enjoy doing. And I think it's something that offers you the opportunity to perhaps see the beauty of the world around you while you're praying the Lord's Prayer. Who knows? A bird song might join you in your prayer, or just the stillness of an evening. Whatever it might be, the Lord's Prayer prayed with your eyes open is a unique and curious experience. So here we go. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. So God, hear our prayer. Oh Lord, hear our prayer. That prayer is, as I said, a stabilizing force. It offers us the essentials of life. And I want to talk to you today about these essentials in how living a life for love can really be, it can be a real esoteric, existential kind of practice. I know that. But it is also eminently practical. So in the essentials of love, I want to share with you this idea that we are addicted. Me too. And we have to address our addiction. First step of AA is we admitted we were powerless. And then you can fill in the blank. Powerless over alcohol, powerless over drugs, powerless over our own self-righteousness. Ooh. So we can admit we're powerless over some things, and I've admitted that over a few things in my life, and it is the first step toward getting better. So this power that overcomes us is often selfishness. But in love, we can overcome that terrible disease of selfishness. So I want to challenge you in looking at your heart, your mind, your thoughts, in the context and in the light of love about being right all the time. I think it's important to give yourself space to be wrong. We talk a lot about righteousness. Maybe we ought to talk about wrongtiousness. There's been some wrongtious things going on in my life. I know, and a few other people around me, maybe that applies to you. If you're listening at all and you have an open mind, I think you could see where wrongtiousness gets a hold of you. And where we're right is okay to be right on occasion, and maybe more than an occasion. But beware, the addiction to being right is just sneaking around in the shadows. This love of being right. Well, I'm right, you're wrong, shut up, sit down, let's talk. Well, nobody wants to talk to you now because that's not a conversation, it'll be a monologue. The love of being right is the end of dialogue. Now hear that again. If all we believe about our thoughts and opinions is that we're right, and all we want to do is let everybody know how we love being right and how we love making sure you know you're wrong, well, that's the end of dialogue. That's the beginning of a boring monologue, a monologue about me. You might say you warm your throat up by saying, me, I'm a right person, you're a wrong person. No, let's step away from that ledge. It's not healthy, and it's certainly not love. The love of being right is the end of dialogue, and I would invite you to learn empathy and love for others, remembering that the word other is so important in recognizing how love works. I believe in loving yourself. Yes, I don't want to run past that right now. To love yourself is to understand that in loving you, you love yourself enough to know you need what others contribute to your life. You need what's been given to you. So I want to say that right up front. Loving yourself recognizes you're not an island. You're not a self-made man or woman. No such thing. I always cringe when I hear that phrase, a self-made person. Nobody's a self-made person. Not me, not you. I don't care who you are. I don't care how smart you are, rich you are. I don't care where you came from. You are nobody is self-made. You've been put on this earth by a mama. Let's start there. You came here through the womb of a mama. You were not self-made. You didn't arrive in the universe saying, I think I'll just land on earth. Nope. You know, the old comic book and movie series about Superman, even Superman, you know, Superman came to earth on a rocket ship from the planet Krypton. I was trying to remember his planet, Krypton. And he was sent there by his mom and daddy on a rescue ship when he was a baby. So yes, even Superman in the myth of that story arrived on Earth in a rocket ship, but Superman came from his mama's womb. So remember that when the next time you think about yourself being self-made or self-important, and come to recognize that love, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, challenge of love is to recognize others in their contribution to your life. Others who have their own opinions. Others who have a thought about the big wide world around us. Others, and moving your life from monologue to dialogue. The love of being right is what I'm here just starting in this whole conversation with you. The love of being right. It's the end of dialogue. The love of being right means you're going to have a lot of monologues with a lot of people, and I would propose that a lot of people are going to be looking for the exit when you start your monologue. I've had a few people in my life, when I see them come, I recognize, oh boy, don't ask too many questions because they'll tell you everything they know, and they won't have one whit worth of interest in what I know. So the love of being right is it's an addiction. It's something that'll end dialogue, and it moves us away from having empathy and love for other people. But Jesus said in Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the peacemakers, the Beatitudes. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are the peacemakers. Now, let me pull that apart just a little bit to give some understanding. Peacemaking isn't just about acquiescing to everything. No, that's not peacemaking. That's another issue of addiction called codependency. Peacemaking isn't about just surrendering before you even have a conversation about right or wrong. But peacemaking is about entering a room. That's how I've begun closing our time together, is that Mother Teresa said, go into the world today and love the people you meet. Let your presence light new light in the hearts of others. When you enter a room, be assigned in your mind to bring a light of love into that room, so that when we're peacemakers, we're bringing peace into a room, into a house, into a city, to recognize that when there is peace, there's something valuable going on that has been made, that we recognize that My appearance isn't just for the sake of occupying space, breathing the air in a room. No, my appearance is for the sake of peace among people in the room and making a room full of peace, finding a passion beyond what I usually defend. Now, that's about that addiction of being right. The love of being right is the end of dialogue. And it's because we often just, we're just prepared to defend our own opinions, our own thoughts at the expense of who else may be in the room. Learning how to reach for a compassionate comprehension, that's love. A compassionate comprehension outside of our usual comforts. Now, let me say that again. To reach for a compassionate comprehension outside our customary comforts. That's a challenge. That is an uphill climb. Why? Because it's love, and love is an uphill climb. Love does the heavy lifting of seeing that my customary comforts are not the priority in any given relationship. My customary comforts may be accommodated in a relationship, and then again, they may not be, because I may be challenged to lay my opinion down and love and listen. And when I love and listen, I may learn. And learning is a discipline. In fact, the word discipleship, Jesus said, go into all the world and make disciples. He didn't say make converts. He said make disciples, which is make learners, folks that will spend their life learning. How did they learn, and why did they become learners? Because they listened and they learned. So make that your mantra. In fact, I'll add another word to it. Listen, learn, love. Listening, learning, and loving. That's the beginning of dialogue. Loving being right is the crucible. It's the end of dialogue. In fact, in 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, Paul said, love doesn't care who's right. Love cares what is right. To love what is right means I'm not having a conversation with somebody to prove how right I am, but my conversation is to learn what is right. How can we arrive at rightness unless we have a dialogue rather than a monologue? Unless we can have empathy and love for the other. That's the beginning of healing, folks. It's the beginning of healing. I know in a marriage, it's the beginning of healing. In friendships, listening with empathy and love for the other. Oh, my. Neighbors. You remember the Robert Frost poem, or maybe you don't, but you should look it up, about good fences make good neighbors. That a good fence in Robert Frost's day, at the turn of the 20th century, into the 20th century, was not about building wooden fences and chain link fences, but a good fence in that day, especially in rural settings, was where rocks had been laid upon a boundary between one person's property and the other. Just a rock wall that had been established not to prevent you from crossing, but a reminder, this is what we own, and on the other side of this wall, this is what you own. Now, a rock wall built in the way that it wasn't with brick and mortar, but it was built with rocks that could just be piled together over a long stretch. And if you can see in your mind's eye, a 3 or 4 foot tall rock pile, but it's stretched out over perhaps a mile or more. Well, the Robert Frost poem talked about two neighbors that spent once a year walking up and down their rock wall fence. And in so doing, they would see rocks that had tumbled over because of wild animals that jumped over the rock wall and knocked some rocks over, or perhaps hunters or passersby rearranged the rocks for whatever reasons, by accident or maybe just out of malicious purposes. But these neighbors learn once a year to walk that rock wall fence. And when they walked it, I don't remember if the poem tells about how long that wall was, but as they walked it, they caught up on old times and what their previous year had been like if they hadn't seen each other much, and just talking about, oh, remember what happened here, remember what happened there. And recognizing that as they moved a rock here and a rock there to repair this rock wall, that they had just had a brief encounter over a period of a morning or an afternoon, maybe a whole day. And one of the neighbors said, after a day's worth of repairing the fence, a neighbor said, "Good fences make good neighbors." And the inference here is we had a conversation. We talked. We repaired the fence, but the task, the assignment of repairing that fence was to give us the opportunity to catch up on one another's lives. Good fences make good neighbors. We've turned that into, I'm going to build a good fence to remind you, stay on your side, I'll stay on my side, and never shall the twain meet. I find that to be distressing. I remember some years ago, Ginger and I were out in our yard, and we saw a neighbor walking by, and we engaged him just saying, "Hello, how are things?" And he said, "Well, it's been a tough several months." And we said, "Oh, I'm sorry, what's up?" Well, then he told us about his wife had just passed away some months earlier, and we were shocked. We didn't know. We were on the outside looking in, and suddenly we were aware we had been bad neighbors. Not that we were shooting fireworks in the middle of the night, not that we had been throwing garbage in his yard, but that we had not been connected. We had not had a dialogue in far too long. That's my point. Good fences make good neighbors when you walk together to repair your connection. So the love of being right, this is how we started this conversation today, and I've got to bring it in for a close. The love of being right is the end of dialogue, and that love of being right is an addiction. It's an addiction to be challenged and to recognize, I know in myself, I have to recognize that addiction needs to be confronted with step one of the 12 steps of AA, and that is I came to understand that I'm powerless over the addiction to being right, and I need to see that powerlessness as a threat to my mental health, my community health, and whatever friendships that I may want to forge. So the love of being right is the end of dialogue. However, empathy and love for others is the beginning of healing. Well, let's bring this to a close, this bright and shiny summer day. This is the day I'm recording, is in the middle of summer. I want to invite you, if you're outside, just find a comfortable spot and listen to the birds singing around you if you can, or just pay attention to the leaves of the trees that are perhaps gently blowing in the wind, maybe not so gently, but just tune in to your surroundings. Sit down if you can, or simply stand still. Look up in the sky, whatever the sky is, if it's bright or sunshiny, or perhaps it's cloudy. Just take it in a moment. And on the count of three, I want to invite you to a healthy breathing exercise. Take the deepest breath you can. Hold it down into the diaphragm of your belly, down the basement of your lungs, and hold that breath just a second or two if you can. All right? Set up or stand up straight, and on the count of three, take that deep breath. One, two, three. Inhale. Hold it. And exhale. Now, I've done that just briefly with one breath, but what's very good for your mindset, your body, is to do that for 2 or 3 minutes at a time. If you only have a minute, do it for a minute. Calm yourself. Settle yourself. Take in your surroundings. If you're outside, listen to the birds, to the breeze, to the leaves of the trees. If you're inside, turn off the distractions, put aside a device, turn your TV off for just a moment, and calm your mind and your body. And when that happens, your emotions will follow. It's a powerful exercise day by beautiful day. Last but not least, my challenge, my unsettling, awkward, and weird challenge is to tell you that we have an opportunity with every person we meet. Oh, yeah, I know. Every person we meet, there's an opportunity to say the three most holy, magical, and charmed words in the human language. I love you. Whew. Those words are loaded, aren't they? Especially if you look somebody in the eye. Especially if you slow it down and say it carefully and with a real concentration to say, I love you. You don't know who may have their life changed. I just heard from somebody the other day, a young man he's a biker, he's a tough guy, and he said, you taught me how to look people right in the eye, smile, and say, I love you. That makes me laugh in a good way. It makes me happy because I can only imagine folks looking at him thinking, oh boy, what's coming here? And then when they get that, it settles something in their heart. Perhaps someone you say that to, perhaps they have not heard that in months. And regrettably, some folks have never heard it, maybe in years. Oh, I wince when I think of how people aren't hearing that on a regular basis. To say, I love you, is life-changing. Try it. I promise you, it's hard. I promise you, it's beautiful. I promise you, it's a challenge. And I promise you, it'll make your day. So speaking of which, back to Mother Teresa's quote. I want you to go out there today and love the people you meet. Let your presence light a new light in the hearts of others. That's Mother Teresa. Go into the world today and love the people you meet. Let your presence light new light in the hearts of others. Someone else has said, and I don't know who's this quote to give it to, but they've said, the biggest mistake we can make in life is thinking we have time. Be present. Be kind. Love more. Love now. That's what I want you to carry. Love more. Love now. Now get up, rise and shine, and go out there into this world and do something beautiful. Why? Oh my. Because ugly is getting done to death. Ugly has the headlines. Ugly is challenging every relationship on the planet. Let us be the people of love who have decided we don't know how much time we have in this life, so we're going to be present, we're going to be kind, we're going to love more, and we're going to love now. Bishop Randy Dean, happy and to be with you and a pleasure to be with you. I want you to imagine my eyes looking you in the eye saying, I love you. God bless you and happy trails, y'all.
Thank you for being with us today for this episode of No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. Be sure to join us again here next week, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. Feel free to contact us with your questions or comments at randydeanministries@gmail.com, and we welcome your financial support at paypal.me/randydeanministries. No BS Bishop is a service of WPCA Radio and Randy Dean Ministries.